Welcome back, everyone. This is Radio Tony with Amir Michelle, real estate agent, and this is the Everyday Business Show, where we're talking with Amir in a series of shows about real estate from all his wisdom, knowledge, and learning over the years. And before we get into that, I want to tell you about Amir. He is a second-generation investor, and he witnessed firsthand the way his parents renovated profit, and this started at the tender age of 10. By the time he was 16, he had immersed himself in developing an investor mindset, and starting with just $5,000 and the benefit of training from a financial planning workshop at a big four Australian bank, Amir invested in regional New South Wales, Tasmania and Western Australia. And after consecutive years of six-figure incomes extending into seven-figure profit from real estate, Amir became a real estate agent. And now he purely works in real estate full-time as a real estate agent and helping you buy the property you know you need. Now, I was talking to Amir before the show, and he excitedly explained to me that he's found a way of describing what he does. Good morning, Amir. Can you tell us about your tagline?
Good morning, Tony. You know, Tony, every time I come onto your show, it's like a spark, and I feel your energy. But what I love is you're reading my bio, and I'm thinking to myself, I would love to just look at myself in the mirror every morning and read that bio out to myself. Because isn't it exciting have your resume or your bio read out by somebody else? It's like, yeah, you go. But it's a little bit of that pep-up talk for me, at least at the beginning of the show. But I love it. Thank you.
I think that people deserve to be recognized for the hard work, the learning, and the recognition of the mistakes that go into being successful, because you can't be successful without some mistakes along the way. And I know from talking to you, Amir, that a lot of those have triggered immense learning for you and have really helped develop your career in real estate along the way. Just those learnings from what not to do, what worked and what didn't work. And that's what you're dedicated to doing now, is showing and helping other people how to create success and a lifestyle using real estate. And that's your passion, isn't it?
It is. And one thing you described was that workshop for financial planning. That was in New South Wales. So in Australia, we have different states with different laws. Yeah. But we do an RG146, which is a requirement. If you want to become a financial planner, you have to obviously study and get your certification of the RG146. So that was one of the big four banks that I was working at. That was my beginning to understanding numbers and finances and how to read spreadsheets and work out the good from the bad, from the ugly.
And you'd actually done quite a bit before you got to that stage. You'd actually seen a lot from your parents and growing up, which is a wonderful foundation for a young person, isn't it?
Look, I think so. Not everybody's lucky in which parents they have.
That's right.
But I guess there's enough education out there to allow somebody who wants to learn and wants to do and wants to profit to choose a mentor or to choose a coach or to actually invest in themselves to move further. What I love to do now is I find property for those who don't get excited about finding property. And I think that a lot of it is what I saw in my parents and how my parents were using investment property as a vehicle for their freedom, more their personal freedom than just financial freedom. It meant that they could go overseas on a holiday. They could travel Australia for a holiday. And yeah, I think that a lot of that's forgotten now. So one of the luckiest things that I consider myself having was that model in my own home of what it's like to choose to do things as a personal freedom. And the difference there is, when you're choosing things rather than being forced,
Yeah.
you grow as a person. You focus not on saving 5% or saving 10%, but you think in larger terms. It's less of a lack mentality and more of an abundance mentality.
Very important, Amir. I know from my own personal journey that I had to do a lot of work on the idea around abundance and the idea that there isn't really lack in the world. There is actually enough to go around. And if we educate ourselves, and particularly where real estate is concerned, there's wonderful people to tap into, there's wonderful knowledge to gain. And once you start realizing that you can do, don't let the negativity of the world tell you that property's too expensive, that you'll never make any money, that interest rates are going to go up. All of those things will happen from time to time. If you're in real estate long enough, you will see interest rates rise, you will see them fall, you will see property prices go up and down and up and down. But there's always that ability to create wealth from real estate, isn't there?
So you've raised a few very interesting points, Tony. One of them is the ups and downs. A lot of the ups and downs are in your head. I don't mean your head, I mean
No,
everybody's head.
everybody's head.
Think of it this way. If I read a newspaper article that one of the large supermarkets, and Australia really has four large supermarkets,
Yes.
if one of the large four decided to open up a branch in a particular suburb, would I think that the people who are nationally rolling out that supermarket would have done sufficient research to know which suburb is about to grow, to know what supermarket would sustain a larger group of people? You'd think that they would. And from my perspective, if I'm reading something, not as a real estate agent, but just as an interested person who's reading a paper or can see a on my news feed online, I can see a tagline that one of the large supermarkets is opening up. It triggers a thought in my head to say, I've seen this before, this will grow. But that may or may not be reality, because reality is that the large supermarkets have enough money to take a gamble on a suburb, and if it doesn't turn out, they still own the land, which means that they can either knock down the supermarket or simply convert it into residential. So they're not taking as big of a risk as I would be if I'm simply chasing headlines.
Right. So just because you have a big supermarket building a great big new shopping center somewhere, or medium-sized shopping center for that matter, does not necessarily mean that that suburb is going to boom. It may just be that their population is at a point where they need a standalone supermarket, yeah?
Or it could just be a gamble. It could be that the supermarket company is taking a gamble on a direction because of a place that has perhaps cheap real estate. And they're considering later on turning that supermarket into a mini distribution center, a DC. And if we don't know that, and we place our bets, so to speak, we
Correct.
buy a property, especially if it's land and there's nothing around it, and then you're forced to build whether it's good or not.
Yeah.
There are a lot of gambles that you're basing your idea on something you've heard in the news. And the flip side of that is, okay, so on that, in that circumstance, you heard a piece of good news and you're basing your decision on the good news. What about if you heard the other news that a supermarket is closing down? Would you consider then that you should sell immediately and get out of the suburb because one of the big four supermarkets has closed down? It doesn't actually work that way. There's so many more variables. And truly, you have to look at things through clusters. So rather than one thing, what happens if a new area has a Bunnings opening up, a
Yes.
hardware store, a supermarket, if the cinema in the area is opening up. So I look at things more from a holistic point of view of not just one or two pieces of news, but what is the trend overall? Is the federal government getting involved? Is the state government getting involved? Is the local council getting involved? What are the contributions? What are the runs on the ground at the moment? Not the hypothetical in the future, but where is money actually being spent? And then you've got a better picture of where investment is going and why. So I guess that brings us back to more of a blueprint of how do you analyze something before you commit? How do you analyze something to maximize profit or to maximize rental income? Because they're completely different ideas.
They are.
And in one case, you might find that you can get a good rental from an area, but it has very low capital growth. In another case, you can find very high capital growth, but extremely low rental. In other times, of course, there's seasonality. So some areas are great for a holiday, but you wouldn't want to be there in midsummer. You wouldn't want to be there in midsummer. You wouldn't want to be there in midwinter. Great during holidays, school holidays, perhaps in the middle of the year, but when the temperatures hit extremes or when it's rainy season, not quite
Not
the best
good.
place to live.
I
So, I
mean,
mean, there's beautiful places everywhere.
does it come back to your own values and ideals where those considerations around real estate are? So it may actually be important for you to capitalize on the Christmas high rental season and have the property available for your own use at the quieter times. Are they some of the considerations that your real estate investors look for? Is it quite
That is
individual?
such a good question. That is such a good question, Tony. Okay, so to answer that, it would be easy for me to give the knee-jerk reaction and say, yes, it's all individual. But if we look at a blueprint and we try to systemize numbers, then we can look at something from a big picture, a global picture. We can look at something from a national picture, a federal picture. Then we can look at the suburb. And internally within suburbs, there are streets that are good or bad. And I say good or bad, meaning that they either fit your criteria or they don't fit your criteria. So the answer is yes, it's individual. But on the flip side of that is also a system. So in one way, you're looking at things that are completely case by case. In another way, you're only thinking of one of two things, either capital growth or rent return. So passive income, ongoing income, or being able to sell something to make a quick profit, or even a long term, but the long term profit according to the calculation divided by the number of years you're holding something. I haven't really answered that question, have I, Tony?
Well, no, what I was trying to get across is that actually, from your perspective, there's lots of things that are particular to you if you want to, at the end of the day, have some profit from your real estate. But not everyone, that profit is not ev going to be everyone's cup of tea, so to speak. For some people, they will want the ability to holiday at the times when it's quiet and generate a good income at those times when it's a peak period. So it is a little different for a number of people. That brings us back into what we wanted to talk about today. And this is a fabulous story from Amir's catalogue of wonderful real estate stories, and it starts with a suburb called Meadow Flat. Can you tell us about this? It's got a really interesting purchase story as well. You go, Amir.
I remember this really well. And the reason I remember that well was that I was working full time in a shop in Sydney. So think of a shopping center, not like a supermarket, more of a, well, imagine a cinema, and around the
Yes.
cinema, you've got the trendy cafes, you've got the little restaurants. It's that type of shopping center. So more the big ticket items, more of the large big box, brown box type of sofas, luxury goods, that type of shopping center. And when I was working there, my hours on paper would have been 40 hours a week. In reality, I was working closer to 45 to 55, just like everybody else who isn't paid as a, show up and work per hour. So I was managing this little retail place. And I say little, but in the it was a 7-8. Yeah, it was a 8-figure turnover per year. So that's not really little.
No, that's substantial.
That's substantial. So during my lunch break at one of the weekdays that I was on site, we had staff members that could go out of the store, take their lunch break, come back. But
Yes.
there really wasn't anywhere you could drive to. So we all stayed in the shopping center, whether we went to a cafe or whatever. That was our lunch. One of the
Correct.
things that happened to me on a Saturday, the good thing about Saturday is we always had the most staff because it was our
Right.
busiest day. So during a Saturday, I had an organized lunch break, and I made sure that my shift was covered, that everybody was on top of everything before I left the store. But I parked my car that day on the top level of the shopping center so
Right.
that, first of all, I get the best mobile phone reception when I'm sitting in my car. I didn't want to get interrupted. The second thing was, for the previous week, I've been working really hard with a real estate agent that's situated about 4 hours away from Sydney to argue my case so that they would agree to run the auction with me as a telephone bidder rather than me having to drive 4 hours out of Sydney on a Saturday, which is my busiest work day, and then
Right.
4 hours back. They said no. So let me paint the picture of this for you. I'm sitting in my air-conditioned car on the top floor of the shopping center. It's a beautiful spring day, and over my Bluetooth speaker, I can hear the auctioneer reading out numbers. But if you were with me 2 weeks before that,
Yeah.
I was at a local auction. So I went 200 to 300 meters away from my house in Sydney
Yes.
to a piece of land that had a house on it. So imagine yourself walking with me through this house as my first inspection.
Yeah.
The land is 450 square meters.
Yes.
The house has a skillion roof, which means that inside each room, the ceiling slants down rather than being a flat ceiling.
Yes.
In some areas, you could touch the ceiling. So in each room you go into, on the door that brings you into the bedroom, it might be 3 meters high, but on the other wall where the
Side.
window is, you're looking at about 2, 2.1 meters. It's the absolute minimum that you could get away
Minimum.
with. So the minute you've got a light fixture, you can touch the light fixture without having to stand in a chair. I'm
Okay.
walking through this area, and I know that the house isn't new. You could tell that it was built maybe 60 years ago or 70 years ago.
So
The
quite.
scary thing is, yes.
So I had a de it was a decent aged, it not antique, but fairly old.
Fairly old house. But imagine this, as you're walking through, you notice that one part of the house seems like it's lower than the rest of the house. You're walking through and you could see that the rear of the house has sunk. So
No.
when you walk around the outside, when you walk around the outside with your camera, you notice, you take photos, and you realize that at least two or three areas are sinking into the ground. What that means is that it's a structural problem.
Yes,
It
it
isn't a
does.
quick fix.
No.
So 450 square meters, and I know from looking at the house that it's not a paint job. It's not just a renovation that'll mean go in there, paint the house, and move in. You really need to change what it's standing on. And the minute you
Yes.
try to do that, you're going to need to take the roof off. You'll take
Yes.
some of the walls out. You'll change the foundation. So it's going to be an expensive job to fix.
That's right.
the auction was on the Saturday. So
Mm.
after the inspection and running my numbers and working out how much it will cost to demolish and a quick estimate of what type of soil it is.
Yes.
Because remember, when you're doing a foundation,
You've got to have a soil test.
you're going to dig only to the level that that soil is going to support for a structure.
That's right.
So checking the soil and realizing that it may be contaminated and the council may require you to remove a lot of the topsoil just to demolish and put a new thing in there. I'm running the estimates and I'm doing the quick calculations in my head. Then I go back and speak to the experts of what their estimates are without actually digging exploration holes.
Yes.
So 450 square meters,
Yeah.
a house that needs to be demolished, that is
Yes.
unlivable. The
Yes.
fence on one side's completely down, so you could just walk across to your next door neighbor. The back of it, the fence is so rickety that a strong wind would knock it down. The front has a different fence again. So three out of the four parts of the fence are just completely wrong.
Yes.
So what's the redeeming feature? Really, it's just the suburb.
Yes.
So 450 square meters. I went to the auction. I went to the auction after running my numbers and deciding not what I can afford, not what's the most that I'm willing to pay,
Yeah.
but what would make economic sense. I get into the room and think, okay, I'm just going to stand there and bid, but I don't want to be the first bidder, but to be the last bidder. I want to own the house.
Yes.
So the auctioneer starts calling, and I notice this is midday and the room is full. There are 20 to 30
Right.
people on site in the
Yes.
house bidding. I look around, and being a neighbor, being somebody who lives in the area, I don't recognize any of the faces. So I don't feel like they're my next door neighbors just being nosy.
Okay.
But the bidding starts at 1.3, 1.35, 1.4 million, $1 million,
Yeah.
1.5 million dollars, 1.51, 1.53, 1.54, 1,550,000. And I'm sitting there thinking, let's just watch. Let's just see if it starts to cool down. Any raise? Then people start offering hundred thousands
Okay.
up. Goes up to 1.7 million, 1.8 million, 1.81. And I'm thinking, okay, finally, it's going to stop at 1 point. This is still below the number that I'm comfortable with, but
Okay.
man, we are getting close.
Yes.
1.815, 1.816. The auctioneer breaks and goes into a spiel, a
Yes.
story of why this suburb is the best suburb, why it's almost guaranteed to increase in value over the next few years.
You
Guys,
already
read
know
out
all
my
that,
number.
don't you
Should
and
I
me?
bid? Is this a good time to bid? As if I bid, will somebody bid over me? 1.9. What? How? What did I just miss? How did. Anyway. 1.95. $2 million. That voice was my own.
Yes.
I just bid $2 million on a
For a
property
block of
that
land.
needs to be knocked down to reduce it just to a block of land so that I can start.
Yes.
Holy moly.
Yes.
$2 million. Have I just bought this place? 2.1, 2.11, 2.105, going once, going twice, gone. I missed it.
Oh.
What would you have done? Would you have gone the extra 50,000? Would you have gone the extra 150,000? But the numbers said
Ooh.
2 million is the
That was
maximum.
your.
Otherwise, you're stuck.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're stuck.
Yeah.
Are you going to get emotional? Are you going to buy something and then try to justify it in your head on the spot? Now, a week after that, I'm now sitting in my car during my lunch break
Yeah.
at the auction,
Yeah.
not for this property, a rural property,
Yes.
not a local Randwick property.
Yes.
But the auction feels the same. The emotions are there. I worked out the numbers beforehand, just like I always do.
Yes.
I worked out what the New South Wales Valuer General has rated the land, meaning that's what you're going to pay tax on because that's what the government
They
feels just
it's
the piece
worth.
of land is worth. So the Governor General for that piece of land in Meadow Flat, 4 hours north of Sydney, has marked it as worth $47,000 with no buildings on it. 47,000. So I'm estimating that at the auction, with emotions, with everybody jumping in, we
It
might
might
find
go.
50,000, 55,000, 60,000. So over the estimate, obviously. But how high would it go? Are we going to get another excited bidder like we did in
In
Sydney?
Sydney.
The week before that auction, I rang up to register as a bidder. I sent in a scan certified by a Justice of the Peace to the auctioneer, which was the local real estate agent in the area. I sent the scan of my passport, my driver's license, my Medicare card, filled in the form that you do as a telephone bidder. Mind you, this is a regional property. It's not a Sydney-based property. So everybody in Sydney already does these type of forms, but regional is really
A bit laid. They're not quite used to doing
slower.
that. Slow in
They're not
the to.
used to the electronic and technological
Correct.
desires that busy city people have to do. If there's a Saturday auction, then people take the time off and go to the Saturday auction. So one good thing about this was that the auction was run by the government. So the piece of land was being released by the Australian government. What that means is that the real estate agent has to do a formal public auction. But the flip side is that because of the very strong rules that the government enforces, the bidders have to qualify. Sometimes there's no reserve, meaning you can bid a dollar for a property, and if nobody else shows up, it might be yours. But usually now, even the
Doesn't happen.
government makes sure that there's a minimum reserve. So the real estate agent came back to me after I submitted my forms via email and said, "Oh no, I'm sorry, sir. This is a government auction, and they're not prepared for telephone bidding or internet bidding." I see, I understand that, but you're a very large real estate company. You're one of the biggest in Australia. All I can ask is perhaps you wouldn't mind sending my application through to the government correspondent that's handling this auction. Oh,
Don't
very
they
well,
have
sir. I mean,
to?
it can't hurt to try.
I was
So
going to say that
the
they
good news is,
should have done that by
do they have
virtue
to?
of,
No, they don't
yes.
have to.
Oh, they don't
They don't
have
have to.
to.
They don't have
Right.
to. The government official has the final say on how the auction will be run. The good news is that if I have this problem, then everybody has this problem. When there's one property that's being advertised as a government release and they only allow 2 weeks before auction for it to be announced, there isn't that 6 week hype up. There isn't the letterbox drop for all the neighbors to see.
Promotion,
Especially for a
marketing.
rural property, you're not promoting to the rural next door neighbors. It's just, let's find the local real estate agent, advertise it for this day, run it in 2 weeks' time. Get the public to vote. So the good news is that if I'm in Sydney and I'm bidding on a property that the local people may not even know about or care about, there's not many people who are going to show up and get emotional about it. So I knew, let's go back to this car. I'm sitting in the car, the air conditioning's on, the Bluetooth is on, I can hear the bidder. I switch off the air conditioner. I'm worried that that little humming noise is going to disrupt the bid and I'll miss something. And remember, I'm on the top floor, so there's no ceiling. I can just see the sky and it's spring. And on my lunch break, middle of the day in Sydney, the car's starting to heat up. So I don't know if I'm sweating because the auction's freaking me out or if I'm sweating because
Just
the car's
because you're
heating up.
hot.
The auctioneer starts. There's 10 properties that the auctioneer is doing for the government that day. They're all one after the other, and they're all within a few kilometers of each other. I place bids on three of those properties. And I always start low because there might not be a reserve. out of the 10, the first seven sell quite quickly. There's roughly 10 people, from what I can tell, at
Right.
the auction. And I'm saying that because of the bidder numbers being called.
Yes.
So part of it is me trying to have a picture in my head of what
Of.
I'm not seeing, what's actually happening on site. And the other part of me is taking an educated guess to say, well, I know
There's
that legally
only.
they must be registered, so they're not going to make up numbers. But it gets to the property that I'm interested in. And the bidding starts at $500. Yes, $500.
Wow.
So this is just a vacant piece of land. It's of
Yeah.
no use to anybody, and the government is getting rid of it. So the size of the land, remember the week
Yes.
before we were at
Yes.
450 square
50.
meters. The size of this
Just a
piece of
city
land
block.
is just a city block is 450. The size of the piece of land that's rural is 3,600 square meters. 4,000 square meters is
Is an
one acre.
acre.
So, yeah, so it's
Three
not
quarters
quite
of
an
an acre.
acre, 3/4 of an acre. So 3,600 square meters. It's 10 times the size of the piece of land that I live in, 10 times the piece of land that my house is on
Yes.
in Sydney.
Yes.
1,500, $2,000, $2,500, $3,000. Do you know what I walked away with that day?
Oh, tell me.
Because I persevered in insisting that they accept my telephone bid
Yep.
rather than saying, no, I have to take the day off, drive 4 hours there and 4 hours back.
Yeah.
I walked away with 3,600 meters, about 100 meters from the local public school. It's a corner block
Yes.
close to the Great Western Highway.
Which is a major highway
Five
through the rural
major
areas of.
highway connecting Lithgow to Bathurst.
That's right.
3,600 square meters for $5,800. That doesn't make me special. That doesn't make me special. That just means I'm persistent.
That's right. That's
Now,
right.
what would you put on that property? If you had 3,600 and you know that 400, 500, 600, even 1,000 is a big enough piece of land to build on,
That's
would
right.
you break it into 600s and make six of them? Would you build storage sheds? Would you build a residential house at all? Or would you build a motel? There's
What do the
so many
numbers
options. If you're
say?
close to the highway, great question, Tony. You've done your research. So the numbers say that on the same street,
Yes.
houses that are a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom are selling between 600,000 and 900,000. So the building cost of a house, if you're looking at the basic most,
Yes.
let's say it's $2,000 per square meter. So if you're thinking of a 120 square meter house, you simply multiply 2,000 by 120.
Yeah.
If you're thinking, what accommodation do people want? Then let's say that a double bedroom might be 3 meters by 3 meters, enough to fit a queen size bed and a built-in wardrobe. So if we had four of these bedrooms, let's just do some quick maths. 3 by 3 is 9, let's say 10 square meters. And you had four of those, so that's 40 square meters.
Yes.
You have 80 square meters left over to do a
Kitchen,
massive lounge
living,
room with an
yeah.
open plan kitchen with a living room all in one.
Yes.
You could potentially, if you think about what size a comfortable bathroom is,
Yes.
maybe 2 meters by 4 meters is comfortable for a shower, a bath, a toilet, a vanity. So would you convert a 4 by 4, meaning a 16 square meter area, into a back-to-back bathroom? So on one side you've got a 4 meter by 2 meter, on the other side you've got a 4 meter by 2 meter.
Yes.
So how big is that? 4, 4, 16,
And
16 plus 40, we're up to 56 out of the 120, and you've got 60 left over
yes.
for everything else. That's massive.
Yes.
In Sydney terms, it's
Yes.
massive.
In Sydney terms.
Here's the catch. Buying a property for $5,800 leaves you with so much of the options and the time. Because a lot of time when you're buying a multi-million dollar house, you have to make a decision quickly. The cost of holding land and doing nothing is prohibitive. You're losing money every year, it doesn't have anything on it. If you had a 5% interest rate on a mortgage and you purchased $5,800 property, let's say altogether you spent $10,000 on your research, your solicitor, all the bits and pieces. What's 10% of 10,000?
A thousand.
$1,000? So that means per year 5% is half that.
$500,
So if you can afford $500 a year to hold a piece of land, 10 years down the track, maybe the government's invested on that road. Maybe they've invested at the school that's 100 meters away. Maybe the population's growth. Maybe the population has grown. So the question there, and this comes back to
Do
what you
you
asked me about
hold?
earlier, do you hold or do you invest where a supermarket is investing, where an Aldi, a Woolworths, a Coles is investing? Do you work out where government infrastructure is spending hundreds of millions of dollars on new roads? Do you find out where the nearest Bunnings or hardware store
How
is
far
opening up?
away? Yes.
Because these places can afford to take a gamble with their money and let it sit there for 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. Can you?
I see.
I know for me, that's one of my considerations.
Yeah.
Would I go out regionally and buy something
And
that costs me
wait.
$500 a year to hold? Probably. If I
Yes.
had to pay 10 times the amount, and remember the cost of what the Governor General said
Was
that land
50,
was
47,000?
47,000.
Yes.
So if you're buying a land at auction because the auctioneer doesn't want to have any internet bidders, doesn't want to have any telephone bidders, and is only opening up to people that drive all the way out there to bid in person, then you're potentially buying at one-tenth the value of just the vacant land on its own. So if you just want to flip it in 3 years' time and recover your $10,000,
You should be able to.
potentially make a profit, I never say should, but potentially you've got the ability to make that decision in 3, 4, or 5 years without having the pressure of making a decision of this or that, without the pressure of losing some of your personal freedoms, missing out on a holiday because you're trying to tighten your belt to save the extra 5% or 10%. So imagine a time where you're no longer pressured by time pressure because you've made smart financial decisions.
That's right.
And that's one of the universal things that I come back to. Is your purchase going to put stress on you?
On your
Not
financial
because you're
situation.
gambling or you're worried whether it's going to go up or not, but the outside things, the school education for your kids, the food on your table, the type of car you drive, if the washing machine breaks down, if you're putting so much stress on yourself to get ahead in life that you're missing out on the comfortable
Goodness of
necessities,
life, yes.
you're doing the wrong thing. You should be comfortable in what you're doing and not stretch so far that you're desperate to make a decision, that you're desperate to sell, that you're desperate to buy. That's not a good life. That's
No.
stress. That's not healthy. So, coming back to the question you asked, do you invest for rent return? Do you invest for capital growth? I do both. And I find that my customers quite often are working
Want to do both?
full-time in a job just like I was.
Yeah.
They work not the 38 hours a week, they quite
Or
often work
longer.
the 40, 50, 55, 60 hours a week. But the one thing they have in common is that they enjoy personal freedom, that personal freedom is important to them. And that's why, coming back to the question, what do? I help people buy property. And I help them buy property in a way that isn't stressful, but also I listen to what their overall needs are. So I help buy property for people that aren't excited by property. They're excited by personal freedom. They're excited by financial freedom. They want the research done. They want to know that they're making a decision that's balanced rather than going out and hunting. You see, I
And
love
that's
the
what
hunt.
you
I
love.
actually,
You love the hunt, don't
that's it.
you? So people can
That's
actually
I
go
love
to
hunting for
you.
property.
People can actually go, Amir, I want to buy a property in this general vicinity. I want it to be positively geared, or I want capital growth, or whatever it is they want. And then you go hunting for that property that exactly suits their specifications. And that's based on all the research that you've done, all the learnings you've had over the number of years. And it takes the hard work out of that real estate investment process for many people. I love looking at real estate, as you know, and I understand your hunt for the right property. That I find that exciting as well. But for some people, they don't do that. They know that they want to have some real estate. They know that that's the way that they want to achieve what they want in their life, but they just can't get excited about it. And that's where you come in, isn't it, Amir?
Absolutely. So if I gave you a 60-second answer to the top 10 questions that I get asked,
Yeah.
I'll cover the questions very quickly.
Yes.
The requests, more than questions, the requests are, I want something that's close to this school. My kids have just been enrolled at that school. I'm looking to buy. I've been renting for a while. I'm ready to buy and settle down because I don't want my kids to move from school to school. Help
Yes.
me find a property close to this particular school. The second one is, I've got an investment portfolio. It's locked up in a self-managed super fund, so it's very restrictive on the purpose of what I'm buying. It has to tick the boxes.
Yes.
Help me find something for my investment for a self-managed super
Super
fund
fund.
portfolio that's
Yes.
going to tick the boxes according to my super fund deed. The third thing is, I want to buy something now so that I can get into the rat race, so that I can just
Yes.
start on this property ladder to help me
Yes.
bunny hop in a few years' time to the next thing. Can you
Yes.
help me buy something that has the
Yes.
potential to either renovate or increase the value by stuff that I do to it? The fourth one, and probably more common than the previous three, is help me find a piece of property that hasn't been developed to its maximum. Something that can be divided, subdivided,
Yes.
that can be knocked down and built at a higher density level, that potentially has a great backbone or suburb, but is underutilized.
Yeah.
The next one after that, once we've covered that regionality of being close to school, is I'm thinking of moving interstate or
Oh,
city to city or
yes.
internationally. Help
Yes.
me find a property that you can organize for me so that when I arrive, when I land, when I drive there, I'm ready to start moving in.
Yeah.
The next question I get is, and this is far less common than you might think, I'm looking for a house that has a swimming pool in the back, 4 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms. And each room has to be at least 3 meters by 3 meters. And the bathrooms need to be big enough so that my growing kids can have a shower at the same time in each of the 3 bathrooms, so that we're
Yes.
not having that morning
Fight.
rush hour fight about whose turn is it in the shower.
And someone's taking
Far
too
less common
long.
to get that. That's right. That's far less common, mostly because there's a lot of emotions that are part of buying a property you're going to live in with your family.
That's right.
So a lot of that stuff I'm happy to do, but that probably covers 10% to 20% of the questions I get asked rather
Yeah.
than the large majority of the customers I work with. One of the most interesting ones, and this is slightly different, is when a company or a person hits a threshold within a state where
Yes.
they don't want to get more land or pay more tax, and they're now looking for something that's different,
Yes.
as in interstate compared to their
Yes.
other investment properties. They don't want to fly there. They don't want to start researching, but they want an expert to give them advice on the
Yes.
building structure, on the contract, because different states have different laws.
Yeah.
So when you're making an offer or when you're signing a contract, the contract in one state looks different and has different terms to the other state.
Yeah.
So sometimes I get asked to buy something interstate, and through my journey, I've bought in Tasmania, New South
I
Wales, Western
know.
Australia. So I've had a few of these close calls where my interpretation was different to my solicitor's interpretation. Of course, I always go to a qualified solicitor.
Yes.
So reading something and assuming that the English term means the same as the legal term is not correct. Make sure you get professional advice.
Yes.
Great place for a disclaimer. So all I'm
Yes.
saying here in the whole episode that we've been filming so far
Yes, general.
is only advice, which is general advice,
Yeah.
and check with your professionals before making a decision. That out of the way. If somebody was saying to me that they're looking for an investment property interstate and they gave me a number, then that number reflects on the net return, rental return, the gross return, rental return, but also some of the other risks that are in the area. Are they buying in an area that's only one type of industry? Are they
Right.
buying something that's sustainable because it has lots of different jobs from lots of different industry segments? Is this going to be a quick flip? They want to buy something, they want to physically fly there, renovate, fly out again, and sell it because they've made a change. And I think we're up to number 8. I haven't been
Yes.
keeping track, but
Yes, eight.
roughly number
We've
8.
got yes. So
Great.
number nine.
So number 9 is if I buy this 2-bedroom house that's oversized and I
Yeah.
put in a wall, making it a
Three
3-bedroom, or
bedroom.
put up two walls, making it a 4-bedroom, is that worth the money I'm spending on the renovation? So I get asked to provide the figures in a specific suburb of what's the average sale price for a 2-bedroom house or a 3-bedroom house or a 4-bedroom
Yes.
house, and is it worth spending 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 in converting something to something else rather than a knockdown and rebuild?
Yeah. So, I mean, you and
Number
your
10.
team can provide that those numbers for people asking those sorts of questions.
I work with people that are licensed to
Yes.
do these quotes. So a
Yes.
licensed builder would give you a quote of how much it costs and what falls under that state and council's
Correct.
legislation of what they can do without permission, what they can apply for a simple permission for, or what they need a full development application for.
Yeah.
So I don't do these things myself, but my
No, no,
team
no.
have
Yes.
licensed, that's right, we have
Yeah.
licensed trades that come up with the numbers to say, here's an estimate, here's two or three estimates, especially if you need it for a
Good.
super fund or you need it for
Yeah.
some entity or group that requires one single contract to do everything. There's a lot of little bits and pieces, but rather than a granular, I thought I'd cover these 10 things on
Yes.
a quick sweep, on a
Yes.
general brush stroke idea. The
Yes.
10th one,
Yes.
and this is probably the closest of what I would call speculation. The 10th one is from your research of every, there's 8 states and territories that are the hotspots in Australia. So
Yes.
there's 6 states and 2 territories, ACT and Northern Territory. And without leaving mainland, apart from Tasmania, when you do the numbers game and you work out what is the biggest difference between the lowest and the highest in a suburb, it gives you a
Right.
list of suburbs within a state. Let's say 25 of the hottest suburbs in Western Australia, 25 of the hottest suburbs in Queensland, 25 of the hottest suburbs in New South Wales. And by the hottest, I don't mean that they've been in the newspapers the most. I mean real figures where the government has said, yes, this transaction has completed, not just advertised,
Yes.
but been taxed. So there's a record of this purchase, this sell at a specific date with a specific explanation of whether it's a 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom. If you look at the suburbs that are the biggest difference between a 4-bedroom house and another 4-bedroom house as a variation in price, what is the difference? Is the difference that one is a 70-year-old house, the other's a brand new? Is the difference in a coat of paint? Is the difference in a renovation? Is the difference in a street? So the 10th and most speculative, but also possibly the most exciting
Yes.
is find me the suburbs that there's a massive difference between one 4-bedroom house and another 4-bedroom house because I'm looking for something that I can manufacture growth. Speculation, lots of hard work,
So that's the
right? It's
speculation component.
called the, it is, and it's called sweat equity. That's
Yes.
when you go in and
Yes.
you do something with your own bare hands or you
Yes.
hire a group of trades to do something for you,
Yes.
but that can be really exciting.
Yeah.
So they're kind of the top
So they're
10.
your 10. Amir, just
They're the top
quickly,
10.
going back to self-managed super funds, And I know that this is topical at the moment because lots of people are transitioning their super to self-managed super funds, and that whole idea that you can buy property within a self-managed super fund. Are there specifics around self-managed super funds that you have to be aware of? Do you know? Yes.
Yes, there's specifics.
Yeah.
Yes, there's advice that's required. So you do need a
Yes.
financial planner. You do
Yes.
need somebody to set up your trust. You need to decide what state that's going to be in. You also need to decide the industry, if it's going to be a residential property or a commercial property.
Right.
The advice is really good these days.
Yes.
So when I was working at a bank, the level or the number of financial planners that were comfortable giving advice on self-managed super funds were very few. In the last few years, the population, let's say that we had a lot of baby boomers to start off with,
Yes.
but superannuation in Australia, think of the 1980s as when
Yes.
money started to be put into super.
That's
So
right.
the question of super wasn't really important to somebody who
No.
was working in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s.
No, wasn't
But
a thought.
if the generation started working in the 1990s, and they already had money going into super and being locked until retirement in super, that nest egg now is an important decision.
Yes.
So the shift hasn't been in the age of the population, but rather the working history of the
Yes.
population and
Yes.
whether they are at that pension or that superannuation self-managed or self-financed group. And
That's
so
right.
that's really made a difference in the sheer number of people requesting financial advice. So always go to somebody who's a
Yes.
certified and licensed financial planner, because there are a few legal things you have to tick to make sure you're doing the
Yes.
right thing. But
Yes.
also, their job is A, to protect you, B, to let you know what the risks and what the thought process is between your decision,
Yeah.
but also other things like estate planning.
Yes.
Setting something up so that your family move up the ladder financially.
That's right.
If you're trying to do something yourself, the most common 75% of things you probably already know, but there are things that a financial planner has come across, both
Yes.
in their studies or with their experience, that nobody could have possibly gone through all of those experiences themselves. So try to learn from somebody else's experience rather than relying on your own experience. Especially if it's a large amount of money. If it's
Yeah.
$100,000, $200,000, $1 million, it's
Yes.
hard to save that money a second time. So you don't want to risk that
Yeah.
in speculation. You
Yeah.
also don't want to be trapped by making a mistake on paper,
Yeah.
and then when you change from one style of contract to another, the government charges you perhaps a second group of stamp duty because you're
Yes.
converting things.
Yeah.
So yes, there's a lot of rules, there's states, there's federal, and there's also markets within markets. So we said residential, commercial,
That's
industrial,
right.
they have different classifications. So yeah, it's a great question, and it actually affects a lot of
I was just going to say it's quite topical at the moment. So essentially,
quite
what you're
topical.
saying, if you have good financial advice with the right setup and someone who has experience in real estate that knows their numbers and knows their statistics, then that's a good way to go as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and get a second opinion if you can.
Yes.
If you can afford to, pay for two different financial advisors to give you a second opinion. So one gives you their initial, the other one gives you a second opinion. Keep minute notes. So
Yes.
when you do get advice, keep that advice on file so that you
So you
can
can
refer
refer
to it.
to it.
Real estate is a long game. So in 10 years' time or 15 years' time, when you're looking back at
You want to
what
look at
made
the
you purchase that in
notes.
the first place, you
Okay.
look at the notes to give you the idea of what you're meant to do at the exit anyway, because quite often they'll tell you when, at what stage are you going to liquidate that? What stage do you want to hold it? What stage do you renovate? And
Yeah.
if that renovation is going to be covered with what depreciation schedule?
Yeah.
So
Yes.
there's things that you'll learn now that you'll use in 15 years' time.
That's right.
Keep your
And those
receipts. Keep the advice.
professionally done depreciation schedules are just so important for a rental property situation, that they make a huge difference to the amount of tax you need to pay in the long and the short term. So, I mean, we are just about out of time. Next week, I want to talk a little bit more about some of those rural properties, in particular Oberon. Thank you so much for joining the show again today to give the audience your expertise about real estate. There's so much to know, so much to learn, and I'm really grateful that you take each week to sit with us and talk from your space of knowledge and wisdom. I am out of time, and I want to know next week what you did with that little property in Meadow Flat. So we'll return next week. We'll tell you a bit more about what happened with Meadow Flat and a bit more about the surrounding area that Amir has invested in. Amir Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show today. I can't wait till next week. Audience, thank Amir for being on the show today. Amir, bye for now.